So right, whenever he starts talking, you pretend like you're me.
Okay.
Okay.
Dave, what is going on? How are you spending the last few days before our Christmas break here?
Pretty good. Just working on a couple of scratch projects.
Yeah. That's good. Were you traveling this week or?
No, we actually weren't traveling. Just hanging out at home.
Okay. Cool. How's Lauren doing?
He's good.
Hi, Lauren X. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Did you abduct your father? Is he there as well?
He's yes. there.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Excellent.
Although we did temporarily kidnap him.
Dragoon him into doing the show. That's excellent. What a treat. So Dave, for the Dave and Gunner show this week has been good enough to invite his daughter Lauren on, who we've talked about more or less ceaselessly over the last, 39 episodes, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Lauren, we've probably talked about you in easily 90% of the episodes. I mean, you're getting a lot of press on this show because, you know, Dave's a proud father. I think it's wonderful. But this is a really good, this is a very timely show because this week is the, what is it? It's the Youth in Open Source Week at opensource.com, right, Dave?
Yeah. So Jen White reached out to me and was like, hey, we're doing this whole Youth in Open Source Week at opensource.com. Do you happen to know any Scratch programmers that know anything about guinea pigs? And I'm like, yeah, I might know somebody. And so, yeah, no, they're really pleased with the article that that she did with Dave Hamblin of Element 14. And it was like, oh, well, maybe we can get an update on what she's up to and how she got to where she was. And so I thought that was really nice of Jen to reach out. So here we're going to do an episode dedicated to Youth and Open Source Week at opensource.com.
Oh, that's so cool. That's wonderful. And what a treat, Lauren, to be able to talk to you here in person. It's so much nicer to talk to you rather than about you.
Yeah.
I suspect you prefer it as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, Dave, do you want to interview your own daughter? Or do you want me to jump in here?
Well, I guess before we even get into that, where should people go if they want to, when Lauren starts link dropping, where should they go to read more about what she'll be doing and what she's been looking at?
Oh, that's a good question. Lauren, where should they go?
ddshow.org. D as in Dalek, G as in guinea pig, show.org.
Nicely done. Nicely done. You know, she's actually quicker with the initials than I am. Yeah. I always fumble the DG if I don't do the Damon Gunner. I can't improvise as quickly as she can. So nice work, Lauren.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
So Lauren, how did you get started in this? I mean, was this your father locking you in a basement for months and saying don't come out until you've learned computing, or how did you get into this?
Well, if that was the case, I would probably still be down in that basement. Basically, it just started when I was little, just getting the little static guard bracelet things, going in, taking apart computers, just messing around, seeing what they looked like. And even just running, like, if we had to boot and nuke a computer, I would help him with that. And then later, it got on about fifth grade, he started teaching me Bash over Christmas break. And then in February, my mom was just like, hey, I have this cool Robot Valentine thing. And I'm just like, oh, I can write a little program in there to put on there. So it's just like, first name, will you be my Valentine? And first name equals daddy. So it's just cute.
I saw that. We'll put a link to a photo of that in the show notes. I very specifically remember the day after Valentine's Day that your father sent to all of his coworkers that Bash Valentine in an email, and it was just adorable. It was so cute.
He still has it right next to his computer.
that's great. That's wonderful. Okay, so now you've got enough Bash to give your father a very charming Valentine indeed.
Yeah.
But what's interesting to me is you didn't just kind of stop there and be like, okay, well, mission accomplished, I made my dad smile. You actually kept going, and it actually kept going in a pretty serious way, right? So what came next for you?
So next, it was over spring break of eighth grade, And I started to learn Gluster, which is file sharing by Red Hat. And so we taught that. We learned valuable lessons such as don't do a file name count on a big file of a million folders. That takes a while.
Right. It does, yes.
So, yeah, so we did that. And then in January of that year, I was the first woman presenter, probably the youngest presenter ever, at the Akron Linux, at the Akron Lug. And, well, Akron. So.
And you just didn't show up for the Akron Lug. No. That wasn't your first lug, right? That was, you've been going for years. Why don't you talk about that?
I'd actually been going for years before that. I would be my dad's little page down girl, and I would do the page down on his presentations, and I would sit and watch other people's too, other people's presentations as well. And I generally like learned, I guess, the majority of how to present from my dad by watching him and being his page down girl at the blog.
Yeah, totally. Well, no, but you, what was interesting to me is like you kept going, right? It was, I mean, I'm trying to imagine like the vast majority of people in like fifth or through eighth grade, if their dad made them go to a lug, they're going to sit there and like roll their eyes the whole time, right?
Actually, it was towards the beginning, it was more of the promise of mashed potatoes because I really like mashed potatoes. I had at that point really good mashed potatoes, so that was a little bit of a bribe.
Nice. Yeah, because that was one of the benefits with this lug is that they would always have it like around food, so it, you know, we would have it at the one restaurant, and Lauren would always get the turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy and all that. And yeah, and it was funny because you know, I would present, and she, you know, and she would just poop out, especially, you know, with the eating the turkey and the mashed potatoes. She's just like wiped out,
food coma.
She's like ready to leave, and you know how it is, you're giving a presentation, and then once you're done, everybody wants to talk to you. So she's like tugging on my shirt, you know, saying, "Oh, I gotta go. I'm tired. And then she went to present, and it's like after she did the Gluster talk, it's like everybody was coming up to her to present, and I'm like tugging on her. It's like, "I'm tired. I want to go." It's like, "Come on, stop signing autographs," and you know, and it was really funny seeing that turnaround. So that was pretty cool.
For the record, nobody asked me to sign in any autographs.
No, but that's great. The student has become the master. Yeah. That's wonderful. That's great. So now you've got your, so after this Gluster talk, that's rewarding, right? To be able to do that, right? And have these folks come up to you afterwards and be asking questions. And so again, like here's another opportunity for you to just kind of switch gears and be like, okay, cool. I got that figured out. I was able to present at a lug and be done with it. But then still like you kept with it, right?
Yeah.
How is it that you kind of like explore computers in this way, right? Like it started with bash scripts and then suddenly you're playing with Gluster. Then you're moving on to other stuff, which we'll talk about in a second. Are you just kind of following your nose here or is there like structure to it?
Mostly my dad finds cool stuff and shows it to me and I'm just like, ooh, and then I go mess around with it. And sometimes I make a Valentine and sometimes I go give a presentation on it.
Mm-hmm. Is there stuff that he's shown you that you, that like just didn't interest you?
No, I don't think so.
Huh.
Yeah. Nice. Well, so a lot of times too, it's, you know, you come up with some technology like Gluster or Bash, and it's, you could imagine that it's not very, you know, it's for, you know, a 9-year-old or 8-year-old or whatever, it's not very compelling. But if you could sort of frame it in something that is compelling for the student, I think that's what really makes it really compelling. So it's like we were creating files in the Gluster file system, started off by naming each of the files after her guinea pigs. And then we started creating files, and like Lauren was saying, we, you know, it's like we did like a while loop to create like a 1,000 files or 100,000 files, and we did more and more and more, and then we did like an LS, and then it made the system fall over because we had so many files created.
Yeah, it took a while to get over that, and then like a few hours.
But you thought it was funny though, because it was, you know, and it allowed
it
us to be
kept going and going.
Yeah. But it's stuff like that where you could experiment and try things, break stuff, and not be afraid to break things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It didn't hurt anything too badly.
Yeah.
We might have had to restart the computer, but...
Yeah, we had to restart the VMs that we were using, but it was fine.
Yeah.
That's what VMs are all about.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, when Lauren, I probably started about the same age you did, and I know my own experience was like really similar. Is I just I kind of in some cases it would be my mother or my father would show me something interesting, or I would discover something interesting myself. But I think the most important part is being basically fearless and not being afraid to break stuff, right? Because it's only like when you break stuff that you actually learn things. So like anyway, for me it's like treating it like a creative process rather than, you know, something you have to like memorize by rote is a huge deal, which is me making an awkward segue to, I think, the next thing that gave you fame and fortune, which was your work with Scratch, right?
Yeah. So Scratch, basically my dad got this Raspberry Pi thing. We got all the parts, set it up. And at first what attracted me was the Pi games, because who doesn't like to play games? So I was just messing around on that until we got the Raspberry Pi Educator's Guide, and it had these Scratch tutorials, so I looked at it, and I'm just like, okay, this seems pretty easy, so I went through the manual, and my dad helped me sometimes, figured out that the script in the manual was actually wrong.
Mm-hmm. Did you submit a bug? Did you let them know that it was wrong?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, it was an O'Reilly book that we were doing, and to me, O'Reilly books are notoriously for coming out with stuff before they do a whole lot of QA. I don't know if you've experienced that too, but it's frustrating to me. But the Educator's Guide I thought was even more valuable than the O'Reilly book.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want to put down the Educator's Guide.
Yeah.
It was the O'Reilly book.
Yeah. But then, so you got going with that, but it's like, if I would have gave you Scratch on just like a regular old computer, do you think it would have been as compelling, or having it on a Raspberry Pi, was it the combination of this itty-bitty computer? Like, did that have an increased coolness factor, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was, because, like, you see the big laptops, all the giant supercomputers, and then there's, like, the idea that everything can be simplified and shrunk down to this one little credit card-sized circuit board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's,
mm-hmm.
like, giant room-sized computers. Circuit board.
Yeah, and it's yours.
Yeah.
And it's mine. So to me, it just sort of represents like all the power in one.
And this goes back to being fearless again, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, you break the Raspberry Pi, we're out $35, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's so cool. And so so you're playing around with the Raspberry Pi, you're playing around with Scratch. Now, did you present Scratch at the Lug, or because you kind of took this on the road, right?
Yeah, I did do Scratch in the. Well, actually, first I did the Cleveland Mini Maker Faire, which is where I met Element 14, because my dad and I were walking in with all of our stuff, and then I see Element 14's table, and I'm just like, Daddy, they have Raspberry Pis too! So we went in and we talked to them.
Yeah, we talked to Dave Hamblin, right? And it's like, Element 14, they actually have a presence in Brecksville, Ohio, which is right next to Cleveland. So we're like, oh, hey, we're talking. And he's like, oh, I'd love to do a blog post on, you know, what Lauren's doing. And then what happened? We did a blog post, right?
Yeah, we did a blog post, and then that got picked up by opensource.com. So that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That's great. And I think to date, that is actually one of the most popular opensource.com articles that they've done.
Wow.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
And this all surrounded around your the thing you were showing off at the Mini Maker Fair was your guinea pig game.
Yeah,
right. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so basically you're a guinea pig. You're running. You escape from your cage. You're running around the house, trying to get lettuce, but avoid the hand
from picking you up.
Because that adds times to your score, and the objective is to get the lowest time.
Mm-hmm.
So. Currently, I'm in the process of revamping it and thinking of adding like a little animated title scene to show the storyline. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to add several power-ups like apples that make you go really, really fast, watermelons that protect you from the hand.
So, watermelon force field. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did, you know, it's not like you just said, oh, I'm going to write a guinea pig game. You woke up. I mean, we did the Educator's Guide. We did some examples, right? We did that bee that was flying around, and you got to learn the basics. But how did we go from reading stuff in a manual to you writing your own game?
Yeah. So basically, my dad took me out to lunch, and then we were thinking about, and he was like, okay, if you're going to go and do a game, what kind of game would you want to do? Me having two guinea pigs, I of course was just like, oh, I want to do a guinea pig game.
Right, naturally.
We started talking about it, and I actually got so excited I was like drawing on napkins, you know, because I could almost visualize exactly how to do it. We got
and having read the Educator's Guide, not only could you come up with the idea for the game, but you also had like a pretty good idea about how you would do it, right? And it suddenly became possible, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so we were talking about it, we finished our lunch, and then we had to go run a couple errands, and in the middle of it I'm just like, Daddy, we need to go home. I need to program.
You can imagine the smile on my face when I
heard that's right.
A proud father there.
I certainly know for myself, like I have that feeling too of like, you know, I'll be out running an errand or something and be like, I need to get home and get in front of a compiler. I need to
forget. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great.
And then you wrote it in Scratch, but you could have easily just kept the game on Raspberry Pi and didn't share it with anybody. But you uploaded it to the Scratch site, and then things really started to take off from there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it really started to take off, and with the compilation of the Element 14 article and the opensource.com blog post, the game literally it has almost 1,500 views.
Mm-hmm.
We're in like the 1,440s.
Yeah. Not like she's counting.
Yeah, not like I obsessively check it every day or something. Or, you know.
You also get, you know, it wasn't, you know, you put it up there and other people could play the game. They could actually open the game up and see how it was written, right?
They could see the code that I've done. They could see basically everything that I'm doing. So I'm not sure if it actually updates like this, but if there's a shared project and someone's updating it and you're inside, I don't think the code blocks will actually move, but it would be extremely interesting if they actually did.
Oh, like collaborative?
Yeah.
Like you could
so you could like follow someone's process as they're doing
it. Like jointly code at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be interesting.
That would be cool. That was my next question is, do you know, because I know Scratch allows people to, like fork code, right? And people can take copies of your code and go build their own, you know, hamster game or whatever you like. Has anyone developed a derivative or like, has anyone forked your game? Do you know?
Not as far as I know.
Yeah. But you have got a lot of feedback, right?
Yeah. I've gotten a lot of feedbacks. A couple people are just like, oh, I love this. And one person was just like, make more levels, please.
So. Yeah. And somebody, one of our listeners actually gave a bug report in the comments. Robin Price said, hey, Lauren, great game, but I think I saw a bug, right? So he reported a bug and you fixed it. And, right?
Yeah, so you can really collaborate with the entire Scratch community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the other part, too, is that you know, it's not like you just write your own code and you read books and everything. You can go to anybody's Scratch game, open it up, and see how they did things, right? And you can get a lot of ideas. So did you get a lot of ideas from, you know, it's not like you necessarily have to work somebody else's code, but you could see how they did things and use those lessons learned to apply it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what,
you know,
go ahead.
I was going to say that is basically exactly how I learned HTML and building web pages. This is back in the dark ages, right? In 92, 93, around there. Just when web pages were first coming out, the most magical thing about them was that you could go to the web browser and say, view source, and see how someone did the web page. And then you could copy it and go, like, make your own version of it. I think there's something magical about being able to see something that works and something that you like, and then being able to, like, open up the hood and see how it operates. It's just invaluable for being able to learn stuff. You know, I don't think I've been to a formal course on programming, any particular, you know, programming language or something like that in like 20 years, but it hasn't stopped me from learning new languages. Cause you know, for all these languages, I can crack them open and see how they work.
Yeah.
I just think it's really, really cool. And I wanted to ask you something else, Lauren, is I'm noticing a trend here is that you learn something new, like say it's Bash or Gluster or Scratch or whatever it might be. Every time you learn something new, it seems like you get you seem to get this great reward at the end of it, right? You learn Bash, and then you give your dad a Valentine, and you make him extraordinarily happy, right? And by the way, made a good portion of the Red Hat government's field engineering team extraordinarily happy too. And then you learn Gluster, right? And you get to present it at the LUG, and everyone loved the presentation, and you get to have something you're super proud of. And then you get Scratch, right? And now you're suddenly at the Maker Faire, and you're meeting folks in Element 14. You're doing the opensource.com interview. I just see this like, it seems like there's this cycle where, you know, you experiment with something, you do something that you like, you share it with other people, and then you get all this good feedback, which seems to kind of propel you into the next kind of project.
Yeah,
is that what's going on here?
Yeah, pretty much what it is. It's just like, yeah. I do something, and then I'm the type to tell people everything. So it's like, I do something, hey guys, look at this cool thing I made!
Yeah.
Right, right.
So
that sounds very open sourcey. Right. It's mm-hmm. It's like, instead of keeping it all to herself, she pushes it up to the Scratch site. She looks for, she solicits feedback and then incorporates that feedback. Mm-hmm. So it's just very, very open sourcey of her.
Well, and then it's like a Skinner box, right? You get a reward every time you put something out in the world. You get feedback. You get responses back. Right. And that encourages you to share more. It's really nice. I think it's wonderful. I think it's great.
Well, and the Scratch site is pretty good about that too, right, Lauren? As far as like, you know, it provides a safe place for people to share and get feedback and communicate with people, right?
Yeah, because you can really like, the community is pretty self-policing. Like, you can report comments, games, stuff that's inappropriate or just plain old mean. Mm-hmm. You can just be like, hey, Scratch team, I really think they're being rude here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the other part too, as far as like attribution?
Oh yeah. So if someone directly copies the code from another person, like they just go into the scene side, they go look at the code, copy all the code, copy the exact same like characters, all the same backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Then if people find the majority of people who when they find the game an exact copy of the game of like, usually this happens with popular games, but people will take popular games, not change anything, but call it their own. Mm-hmm. You can look at the share dates, and usually the first one, the one that was shared first, is the original copy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the person who has, like, two accounts or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do is you can just be like, hey, I think this looks really similar to the project over here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give credit to them if you copied their scripts?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are really good about that, and they'll just be like, oh yeah, I got the original script from at so-and-so, but then I modified it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really cool. It's nice to have a culture around sharing that, because it's hard to do a culture of sharing and like encourage people to share without having a system for attributing it, right? Because like, why would I share if I don't get credit for it, right? So that's a really important part of it too. That's really cool. That's great.
I know like people can really work semi-collaboratively on Scratch, because like I've suggested ideas. There's this one way. It's like there's this one game. It's called Ways to Exit. And then they have the first few levels out, and they're just like, comment on ways to exit. I'm just like, oh, you could use a jetpack or a transporter meme.
Of course.
Yeah, logically. And they're just like, oh, yeah, I'll put that in for level 10.
Nice.
So
that's awesome. That's great. Yeah, transporter beams and jetpacks are my go-to means of egress as well.
Yeah, go-to escape.
Yeah. So what are you going to do next now that you've conquered Bash, Cluster, Scratch? You've earned fame and fortune in the Akron community, and then on the opensource.com community as well. So what are you going to do next, do you think?
Well, right now I'm again working with opensource.com to write some articles on tiny circuits, which are these little tiny open source circuits. Some of them mm-hmm. are literally smaller than a quarter or a dime. And you can make stuff with them.
Yeah, so there's a startup in Akron called Tiny Circuits.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Burns, who's the founder of it, it's like he reached out to Lauren after the Mini Maker Faire saying, oh man, I'm sorry I couldn't make it to your booth, but you know, would you be interested in seeing what we're working on? And we're like, wow, that's like awesome. And yeah. She and I are going this Friday. They actually, not only are we just going to go to, you know, their facility to meet with Ken and interview him for opensource.com, but they actually are going to have the fab open, and we'll be able to see them building these little things. And it's literally, like Lauren said, it's about the size of like a quarter or smaller, and it's like an Arduino, you know, the open source single board microcontroller, so people could build projects and all that. And you know, they use parts of these parts in like quadricopters and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. So she's going to go visit and interview him.
Yeah,
That sounds awesome. That actually reminds me of some of the stuff from like Adafruit. You seen that?
Yep.
So you could actually sew this stuff into your clothes if you wanted to.
Yes.
Or strap it to a guinea pig. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Jetpack. Yeah.
Jetpacks. Yeah.
Guinea pig jetpack. Flying in her slug.
She'll love it.
Yeah. She loves it. She doesn't make a sound.
Sorry, Lauren, I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
Also, in the spirit of youth and open source week on opensource.com, I'm interviewing my computer science teacher who also works with my robotics team. And I'm working with, and I'm going to interview him about like youth and code.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, cool. Oh, no, Dave, you told stories about Mr. Allen, right?
Yeah. So he, this was a couple episodes ago where, you know, it's like when I got the sheet, whenever she's starting this high school, of like, oh, your daughter needs to have a computer, and the computer needs to run Windows, Mac, mm-hmm. or Linux. And it's like, I'm like, oh, I better call him just to make sure that, you know, it's like, really, for sure, you know, because I didn't want to put her in a situation where everybody's using SharePoint and Microsoft Exchange, and she's like mm-hmm. The odd person out. And
yeah.
And he said that, it's from a faculty policy standpoint that if teachers are going to pick a piece of software, it has to run on not just Mac or Windows, but it has to run on Linux too, to be
Sweet.
Like totally cross-platform. And
wow.
And so far so good. I mean, right, Lauren?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's been going good. And so, and Mr. Allen, he also came to Lauren's Scratch presentation before
yeah.
he even, this was the first time he met Lauren, was she reached out and said, hey, do you want to come to my presentation on Scratch? And he teaches Scratch in your computer science class, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So,
and you're obviously acing that
yeah,
part of the class, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of have like 9.4 in the class.
Only that? Yeah.
I'm bad at myself.
Yeah.
2 points. What's up with that?
Yeah. No, and that's what's really cool is that they have all, you know, they're doing Scratch in their labs, and he's doing stuff with the robotics team. So Lauren's going to mm-hmm. Interview him for opensource.com and, you know, for the youth in Open Source Week.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to that. So, Lauren, tell me more about you. You mentioned robotics. I know you have me intrigued. So we're talking about lethal drones you're building. Is that the scene, or is it robot guinea pigs?
No. They're first robotics competition robots. There are 3 laws saved. We deleted the kill ref program. And we have the whole safety light thing. So we're going to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So...
That's great. So is it, you know, robotics competitions I've seen in the past are like you have to build a robot to accomplish a particular task. Is that kind of the scene?
Yep. Last year was Ultimate Ascent, basically throwing frisbees.
Cool.
The hoops.
Yeah. So you can imagine the having a robot throw a frisbee, like all the different designs you could possibly come up with of like an anthropomorphic arm, right? Or
mm-hmm.
some sort of... like a
crazy animatronic sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
like a Dremel that just spins a frisbee and just launches it. And,
you know. Actually, our solution was relatively simple, actually. We had the lid of a bucket attached to a flat sheet of wood, and then we mm-hmm. had this little teardrop-shaped spinner and
mm-hmm.
another wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheel would spin, and we would have the frisbees loaded in the bucket lid, and then
mm-hmm.
we told the... And then whenever we gave the command to fire, the teardrop-shaped thing would rotate and push the frisbee out of the bucket lid, into the spinning wheel, which would then launch it.
Oh, so it's like a tennis ball machine, but for ultimate frisbee.
Yeah, pretty much. So
awesome, or like a machine gun frisbee dispenser.
Yeah, they do sometimes if you're in the way and tend to be tall. Heads are vulnerable.
So what's the name of your robotics team?
The Fighting Unicorns team, 2399.
Okay.
That's wonderful. Are there designs for, like, the robots that you design, are those designs available online, or like, does your team have a webpage or something like that we can go like see how you guys are doing?
We do have a Facebook page. I'm not sure about the webpage. I believe we do. I'll email the captain, and if we do, I'll give the link to my dad to put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, that'd be great. Very cool.
And one of the other things too, Lauren, is like, what do you do with, you were saying you're starting to do stuff with GitHub for, So, and how does that, tell us about what you're doing with that and.
I'm especially intrigued by this because, to date, Dave is still teaching himself Git. So, Lauren, you may be in a spot where you actually know more about GitHub than your dad.
Yeah, I'll be going to her LUG presentation with the notepad and taking a Git presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's up with that?
Basically, what we do is we all have different branches, and then we just fork them up to the main branch. We haven't really started using it yet because we haven't gotten the challenge and we haven't started building the robot. Mm-hmm. So we're more in the process of learning robot Java
than
actually using Git to work on the actual code.
Right. I'm really interested to hear. I want to hear how your learning Git and GitHub goes for you, because I know for both your dad and myself, we did not grow up with Git. We actually used much more traditional version control systems. And those, like, more traditional version control systems were nowhere near as powerful, and basically require you to think about how you handle your source code and how you share your source code. It makes you think about them in a completely different way, right? Like, one person has to be in charge all the time, and only one person can really keep a copy of the source code. GitHub, because it's a distributed version control system, pushes all that power out, distributes it, of course, just like the name says, and flipping your brain to think in a DVCS way rather than a traditional version control way. I know for me was kind of difficult, embarrassingly. And I know your dad's had trouble with that in the past as well. So I'm really interested to see how you take to the system, because you're totally clean. Like, you're not prejudiced at all. And this is going to be kind of the first real version control system you use. So I can't wait to hear how quickly you pick it up, because I know you're going to do great.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty easy, just because Scratch pretty much taught me how to share nicely with giving credit, being self-policing.
And you don't, you didn't, the other thing with Scratch, which reminds me a lot of GitHub, is that if I want to fork your guinea pig game, I don't need to get your permission.
Yeah, you don't need to get permission, you just remix it.
Yeah, and so that, it's Gunnar, like you were saying, it's that inversion of control where it's like, oh, I want to take the guinea pig game and then work on it and maybe give it back and let Lauren incorporate it. Or it's just really neat. And I think that what she's learned with Scratch will really help her with the GitHub work that she'll be doing.
So this is going to be, maybe, hopefully this will be a short question, but Lauren, one thing I'm also hearing through this whole thing is, I know that, you know, we're talking about this in the context of kind of youth in Open Source Week, but also I couldn't help but recognize that you're in fact a woman, and I wonder, do you think that help or hurt you as you're kind of launching on this kind of already incredible career in nerding and geekery? Has that helped or hurt you so far, do you think?
I think it'll help just with the robotics team. We can just stay focused. We saw this one movie, Boss High, on Hulu, where it was about battle bots, and like, the guys always got distracted by the girls, but the girls were just, like, focused.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So back in episode 21, I mentioned this. Lauren and I watched this movie. It was on Hulu. It's still there. It's called Bots High, where you have these high school teams of kids in Florida, where they have these it's these battle bots where each team will come up with a robot that will go in this arena and destroy these other robots. And it was pretty funny where, you know, you have these like groups of kids where there's one group of boys that were super smart boys, but they kept getting distracted by helping out the girls team, where the girls were just totally focused on, you know, kicking butt and everything. And it was a really good movie. But like, Lauren, do you think that since you are on, you know, you're going to an all-girls school, you have an all-girls robotics team, is there going to be, you know, and you're going up against co-ed teams, maybe all-boys school teams, is there going to be, are you in an advantage or disadvantage, or how do you see how you guys are positioned?
I think that the gender of the person doing the work and working on the robot, writing the code, I don't think that matters. What matters is the quality of the work and how the robot performs. It doesn't matter who did it. It just matters what happens.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. Nicely said, Lauren. That's great. Well, this is great. Lauren, it has been such a pleasure to talk with you at long last, actually, be able to hear the story directly from you rather than having it, because it's going through the proud father filter when I hear the stories,
and
so it's
an amplified, yeah,
an amplified, yeah, that's right. So it's really nice to hear the story straight from you, and I want you to know that I am extraordinarily proud of all the work that you've done over the last few years. You're already making a name for yourself, and I think that your curiosity and your willingness to kind of play around with new stuff is really impressive. You should be really proud of yourself.
I am. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Cool. Lauren, any parting thoughts?
I just want to thank opensource.com for picking up the article from Element 14's blog, and I want to thank Jen Wyke for giving me the opportunity to interview Mr. Burns and Mr. Allen.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thanks, Lauren, for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
and Lauren, if people wanted to get the link to the Killer Robots and to get the link to, if they don't have it bookmarked already, the video game, the guinea pig video game, where should they go to get all those links?
It's ddshow.org, D as in Dalek, G as in guinea pig, show.org.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Lauren. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Gunnar.